From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. Over the past month, protests have helped give unprecedented attention to the issue of police brutality. But right-wing extremists are also trying to seize the moment. At a Black Lives Matter rally in Richmond, Virginia, a man claiming to be a KKK leader drove his truck into a group of protesters. In Oakland, a California man who follows the online Boogaloo movement allegedly shot and killed a federal security officer.
They want to kick off chaos. They want to start the race war. And so they're always waiting for some chaotic event to happen that'll help them kick this off.
Megan Squire is a computer scientist who studies online extremism at Elon University in North Carolina. She's seen firsthand how the recent wave of protests and counter-protests can get out of control. Someone protesting the removal of Confederate monuments recently punched her in the face. Megan says right-wing extremists are using what's in the news to spread their message.
They track pretty closely to whatever the news headlines are. And then what they do is provide the racist, anti-Semitic, fill-in-the-blank spin on that news.
All of these belief systems are like big funnels. They have a variety of ways of recruiting people into them.
That's David Nywert, a reporter with the nonprofit newsroom Type Investigations. A few years ago, Reveal teamed up with Type to track every single domestic terror event from 2008 to 2016. It showed that law enforcement was focused on extremists acting in the name of Islam. But homegrown right-wing terror was a bigger threat by a nearly 2-to-1 margin.
We were trying to make the point that really right-wing extremism is a much bigger problem than Islamist extremism and that the government needs to be paying attention to it.
Now, we've updated the database to include attacks from 2017 to 2019. We found that white extremist terror has grown and become more lethal, responsible for almost the same number of deaths during the first 3 years of the Trump presidency as during all of the Obama years. And though right-wing extremists appear to target different groups, many are driven by the same ideology.
There's a very specific stripe of white nationalism that we're seeing run through, especially these more recent mass killings.
Today, we're going to connect the dots and show how one act of terror inspires another thanks to online platforms. And we'll ask why law enforcement is still struggling to catch up. Reveal reporters Stan Alcorn and Priska Neely have been digging into this for months. Priska starts us off with a story of a man who witnessed the deadliest domestic terror attack from last year.
Guillermo Glenn is well known in El Paso's Mexican-American community. He's 79 now, and he's been a community organizer and labor rights activist for most of his life.
We conducted a lot of protests. We blocked the bridge. We went to jail.
On August 3rd, 2019, he was just going about his weekend routine.
It was a Saturday morning, right, and around 10 o'clock, so I'd gone to Walmart to buy some pet food, and I was way in the back, and I heard this great big noise.
A warning, Guillermo is going to share graphic details about what happened that day.
A large number of families, women and men, were running towards me from the front of the building. And then I noticed at least one of the women was dripping blood. And I said, well, there's something really wrong. I ran into the woman who was, she had, both her legs had received some type of either shrapnel or bullet wounds, and she was bleeding. So I stopped there to help her. And I grabbed a first aid kit and tried to at least tend to her wounds on her legs. One of the firemen or paramedic came and told, you have to get her out. We're getting everybody out of the store. So we put her in one of those grocery baskets.
When he wheeled the woman to the front, he saw what had happened.
Right at the front door, there was a lot of blood. I knew then that there'd been a shooter. It was a very traumatic scene. You know, I saw the body of a man with half his head shot off. There was a lady laying on the pavement across from where we're loading the people. I didn't know exactly who he had taken out, but I didn't have that information that he was actually shooting Mexicans.
The suspected gunman, 21-year-old Patrick Crucius, drove roughly 10 hours from outside Dallas to the El Paso Walmart right near the Mexican border. Police say he opened fire. 23 people were killed, and many were wounded. And then he drove off.
Minutes later, Patrick Crucius stopped his car at an intersection near the Walmart. He came out with his hands raised in the air and stated out loud to the Texas Rangers, "I'm the shooter."
He's facing 90 federal charges, including 45 hate crimes. After Guillermo witnessed what happened that day, he got in his car and went to the restaurant where his friends always gather on Saturdays.
Several of my friends came up and hugged me and said, "Oh, you're okay. We're so glad. We've been looking for you. We thought you might be there." And then they showed me the manifesto.
The manifesto. Minutes before the attack, the shooter had posted a document filled with anti-immigrant rhetoric to the online message board 8chan. Some of Guillermo's friends showed him a copy.
So I sat down. I had some food. I had some my regular Saturday menudo. And then I finally realized what had happened right after I read the manifesto.
The Crucius Manifesto reads kind of like a corporate website. It has an About Me section and parts where he outlines his warped vision for America. He matter-of-factly explains how his attack will preserve a world where white people have the political and economic power. He says peaceful means will no longer achieve his goal. Reporter David Nywert says this alleged shooter is the quintessential Trump-era terrorist, a man largely radicalized online, entrenched in white nationalist ideology, and fueled by the belief that white men like himself are being replaced by Latino immigrants. Crucius wrote that the media would blame President Trump for inspiring him, but he claimed that his ideas predated the Trump campaign. Here's David.
Patrick Crucius especially was so filled with loathing for Latino people that he didn't see them as human.
When David reads the manifesto, he can immediately see the fingerprints of other white nationalists.
Here's how Crucius opens his manifesto. "In general, I support the Christchurch shooter and his manifesto. This attack is a response to the Hispanic invasion of Texas. They are the instigators, not me. I am simply defending my country from cultural and ethnic replacement brought on by an invasion."
That opening line is a direct signal back to a previous act of terrorism, the shooter who killed 51 people at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, just months before. David says this is part of a trend. One terrorist inspires another, and the cycle continues. Guillermo says he didn't understand all of the references at first, but it was clear to him that the manifesto had ties to a larger movement.
I think he was trying to show that somebody had to take action, and that really angered me at that point. Why would somebody come and shoot innocent people like that?
David says Crucius started doing online research because of the anger he felt over how the country was changing demographically.
But in the process of doing this research, he came across multiple white genocide theories, including the Great Replacement.
The Great Replacement, or replacement theory, unites many acts of hate that we see across the country, around the world.
And that's this idea that comes out of white nationalism, that white Europeans face a global genocide at the hands of brown people, and that they're being slowly rubbed out of existence.
Only a few terrorists in recent years have referenced replacement theory by name, but it's widely popular among right-wing extremists. It's linked to ideas that are many decades old. But one attack in Europe showed how those ideas can be weaponized.
Anders Breivik's terrorism attack in Oslo and Utøya Island, Norway, in 2011.
Breivik killed 77 people in a bombing and mass shooting. Before the attack, he sent out a 1,500-page manifesto about how he planned to lead white supremacists on a crusade against the, quote, Islamification of Europe. Around the same time, a French writer named Renan Camus refined and popularized the ideology in a book. The title translates to The Great Replacement.
And The Great Replacement essentially is this idea that brown people, particularly refugees and immigrants from Arab countries in Europe, are being deliberately brought into the country in order to replace white people as the chief demographic.
And the conspiracy theory claims all this is orchestrated by a cabal of nefarious globalists. That's code for Jews.
You will not replace us!
You will not replace us! You will not replace us!
And in August 2017, white supremacists in the U.S. took up this concept as a rallying cry at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Jews will not replace us!
The next day, a neo-Nazi drove his car into a crowd and killed 32-year-old Heather Heyer. This incident had an immediate impact on the public perception of terrorism, making it clear that white nationalist violence is a serious threat.
Today, the nightmare has hit home here in the city of Pittsburgh.
At a Pittsburgh synagogue in 2018, Robert Bowers is accused of killing 11 people.
He went to a Jewish synagogue because he was angry about the Latin American caravans. The caravans had been in all the news in the weeks prior to that synagogue attack. You know, he blamed Jews and went to a Jewish synagogue to take revenge for Latino immigration.
These are the ideologies that are zigzagging across the globe. In March 2019, the gunman who live-streamed his mass shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand on Facebook also wrote a manifesto. The title, The Great Replacement. The New Zealand manifesto inspired the El Paso shooter to target the people he felt were replacing him. Recent manifestos and books put a new spin on violent, hateful acts, but David traces these sentiments back much further.
What's remarkable in a lot of ways when I read these manifestos is so many of them are expressing ideas that I read in the 1920s coming from eugenicists. Look, I would even take it back to the 1890s when we first started seeing the wave of lynchings in the South as a form of social control. This is very clearly a form of terrorism.
After the El Paso shooting, activist Guillermo Glenn says white supremacist ideology was barely part of the conversation. There were brief efforts to unite the community against hate, a few events held under the banner El Paso Strong.
The politicians, the businessmen, the mayor, everybody was pushing this idea that we had to survive, you know, but they weren't really talking about who caused it or why.
Before we talked for this story, Guillermo says he didn't identify as part of this larger group of survivors that includes Jewish and Muslim communities.
You know, you say, well, it's the Jewish people that they attacked. It's the Muslim people that they attacked. And here on the border, it was just the Mexican and Central Americans. But nobody talks about what does the Great Replacement mean. Nobody put all these incidences together and say, hey, this is something that we should be aware of nationally.
And he says that's part of the failure, part of the reason these attacks keep happening.
That story from Reveal's Priska Neely. As we've been saying, these extremist groups are using online communities to spread their messages and find new recruits. When we come back, we'll hear how it works.
It's a conditioning process. It's a grooming process. And I let myself fall into that.
The evolution of the white supremacist internet. Next on Reveal.
Reveal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance, offering a way to buy home insurance with their Home Quote Explorer tool. Custom quotes and rates are available online. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive.